Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Rebound Looney to Curry. Curry steps around Trey Jones. Gets it to midcourt behind the back. Downtown fires it. Got it! 122-106. Warriors pulling away here in the latter stages of this contest. A contest they have to win.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Hour number three, 888-957-9570.
It's not fair.
957-9570. We're rolling on. We are rolling on here on into this afternoon. Warriors did get a win last night. I had to triple check to make sure they actually won that game because it really didn't feel like they were winning throughout most of it. But a big fourth quarter. Warriors win 130-115. Big games from Steph and Clay, Jordan Poole, as they combine for 91.
I spent at least a quarter of that game, and I know he's been in the league a while, but and I mean no disrespect, but trying to make sure I could pronounce Mamu Kalashvili.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know he was on the Bucks, and I just have never. What is it exactly? What is it?
Mamu Kalashvili.
Mamu Kalashvili?
Mamu
Kalashvili.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be disrespectful.
And he had a good game last night.
He did. Yeah. He had a good game last night. That was the point where I looked at their starting lineup as I was getting ready to do Warriors Live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because usually, you know, if I was like, you know, I'm not even mentioning anybody on the Spurs tonight. Like, I'm just not even going to mention him.
Keldon Johnson's actually good.
Yeah, Keldon Johnson's good. Surprised he even played.
Gorgui Jang has been in the league a long time.
We digress. We got people.
Gorgui Jang at 4 out of 5 threes.
Yeah, he almost single-handedly hurt a lot of bettors last night.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Those that had the Warriors laying 18.5, which I may or may not know somebody who did last night.
Don't talk about that.
It wasn't me, but it was a buddy of mine who I may have steered the wrong direction.
Well, I said it wasn't fair. Obviously, what I'm talking about is what the other owners are doing to the Warriors in this new CBA. It's not right.
All right. Well, we've got full phone lines of people that want to talk about it. 888-957-9570. Mike in Daly City is up first here on Warriors This Week. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. Yeah, just a couple of things. First, this is not my main topic, but I hate the in-season tournament. Hopefully that will flop and go away in a few years, but it's a 7-year deal, so who knows. But the main point is on the salary caps and things like that. When you say ease in, I'm thinking maybe it'll be like $35 million over, and then 30, and then 25, and then 20 or something, and then 17.5. So it's not going to hurt the Warriors much, as long as we're talking about the next 2 years, let's say. They should be able to manipulate around that if they want to. But my main point is, and I've talked to a lot of people in baseball, but not basketball, about having a player cap instead of a team cap, sort of like companies do. You know, you're either in grade A, grade B, grade C, or whatever. The government has all kinds of grades that they put people into pay grades. And you get to the highest pay grade, and they can increase the salary for that pay grade, but you have a salary grade that you can't go beyond. And that way the team can spend as much money as they want, but the players don't get $100 million a year, you know, when the rest of the league's getting 30. I don't know if you like that idea or not.
Yeah, I
know somebody who wouldn't like it.
Yeah, who wouldn't like it?
Players Union is probably not going to sign off on that, as much sense as it seems to make economically.
No, it's, and look, there is still a percentage of the revenue that's going to the players.
Yeah.
And that's of the overall revenue that's going to the players, which...
The BRI, basketball-related income.
And one thing...
It's over 50, isn't it? Yeah, well over.
It was... I think it might be 51-49 at one point.
Yeah,
back in the day, it was 53-47,
yeah.
I think. And then it went back to 50-50 at one point. I think that was in the 2011 lockout. I think it ended up being... It ended up maybe going to 50-50, and it's increased a little bit from that point. The other part of this is the max level raises. We didn't mention that. The 120% increases moved to 140% increases, which I guess have the impact of it's Jaylen Brown and Domantas Sabonis are two players who are up for max extensions with their respective teams, and that could garner both of them pay raises at a higher level. And so a couple of guys that have been, you know, superstar players that could have the potential to make more there.
Yeah. And by the way, I didn't mean to dismiss Mike's plan. Obviously, he's spent a lot of time thinking about it and probably understands it better than I do. It's just, it's a non-starter. I don't know how you'd ever implement something like that, how you'd ever get the players union to agree to such limits.
It would not happen. What do you think overall of Draymond's comments about the players losing because a lot of these teams that are more free to spend now based on the rules wouldn't? And in essence, using the Dante DiVincenzo example, it's, you know, the theory behind it from the league standpoint, or at least the league sell on it, is, well, Dante DiVincenzo isn't going to be able to sign with the Warriors for $4.5 million, but Orlando needs to go sign him for $8 to $10 million, and it benefits DiVincenzo, but then it benefits him from going to a crappy team.
Well, that's what I said. My initial reaction was, I was wondering, is he upset because of how this might impact him specifically? And as you and Rotz pointed out, you know, probably not. So I'm not sure where he's coming from exactly.
I
didn't realize that the players, that there was a perception that they'd rushed into this deal.
Yeah, there was another text that we received that said, hey, Draymond's worried about the fact that he could be a mid-level guy at some point soon, or somebody that maybe would be willing to take less to go elsewhere as a mid-level, and maybe that a team that he would deem desirable to go to on a mid-level wouldn't be able to sign that player. I think it does hurt the ring chaser a little bit. And the ring
that's a good point.
The ring chaser that isn't a veteran minimum ring chaser. Right, because there's levels.
You just call Draymond a ring chaser?
I think
he
could become one.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt,
mm-hmm.
He could become one. I mean, honestly, it's, and I don't know where the Lakers stand in terms of their money, but let's just use the Lakers as an example. What if Draymond, in his mind, knows that there's three teams he could use as leverage against the Warriors to get the Warriors to pay him more? And the threat would be, hey, I'll go to Boston for the mid-level. Hey, I'll go to the Lakers for the mid-level. Hey, I'll go to the Kings for the mid-level. Or whatever, you know, just pick three different teams. And those teams are strapped because they're at this level to where they can't even offer a mid-level exception. Well, that takes leverage away from Draymond at that point. Now, yeah, you can say in his specific situation, he'll opt in and make his $27 million. But down the line, it does create fewer options, I think, for a player to where they've made. I mean, there are a lot of players that have made hundreds of millions of dollars who get to a point where it's like, you know what, I'll take my $6 million to go to the exact situation I want. And, you know, it does literally take certain teams off the board for certain players.
And I think just the idea of it, as I was saying, and I'm partly kidding, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. It's not fair. Draymond's pointing out that the teams that don't want overspending are winning here, and they're reining in the teams like the Clippers and the Warriors that are willing to spend a lot of money. Lower spectrum teams, this is from Draymond's tweet, don't spend because they don't want to. They want to lose, so increase their spending capabilities just to increase them. They continue to cut out the middle. So, you know, Draymond is a winner, and he would like to see, you know, he's a guy that doesn't have all the numbers, but the things that he's contributed to the championships are harder to measure because he's about winning. And here, owners are making it clear that a lot of them are not necessarily about the winning.
No,
so that's deeply offensive to Draymond.
No doubt. And 650 on the Comcast Business text line, JD, sounds like your guy Adam Silver just got a great deal for the majority of the owners. See, I could care less about that. To me, my issues with Adam Silver, like that my issues are the on-court product, the on-court night-to-night competitiveness. Like, mm-hmm. I'm all for players making a ton of money. I'm all for players making as much money as they possibly can. That's not my issue. My issue is, don't do that and then decide you want to take PTO all the time. Like, that's my thing. Like, don't do that and then don't have that. Like, make all the money you want, but don't make all the money you want and then play half the time.
Yeah.
And then play hard half the time you're playing. Don't play half as hard half the time you're playing.
I'm not a big fan. I'm not an Adam Silver fan, but in all fairness, I mean, what do you want him to do about that? I mean, they are trying some things with the minimum number of games played in the new CBA if you want to qualify for awards. I agree with you. It's a real big problem. I'm just not sure what means are available to him that he's not utilizing.
You have to change the culture of the league. The culture of the league has become, it's cool and acceptable to be a dude that doesn't play all the time and still gets his paper. Like, that's become... And Steiny was the first person that hit me to this, and I hadn't really thought of it, but I agree with it wholeheartedly. There's a cachet now that comes with being a guy that doesn't play all the time. And the Warriors mm-hmm. have some dudes that are the exceptions, I think, to that rule. Like, Steph's not that way. Clay's not that way.
Isn't that on the teams, though, who've also allowed that? The teams that have contractual agreements with the players?
My point is, it needs to be... Because you're right. You can't question an injury. Like, at the root of, well, how do you hold teams accountable or hold players accountable? It's tricky because anybody can say, I got a sore foot.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bulky knee. Like, and you may not, but good luck proving it. And if you question it on some level, you're an insensitive ogre. And so you can't do that, right? Especially in today's day and age, you can't question
or
that.
Or worse, I mean, a player could actually take legal action against you.
Yeah, so at that point, it's, you know, you can't be insensitive to the player in that respect. So it is hard to prove, but what you have to do is come up with incentives to play, which I think along the lines of, and again, you could never do this, but it's like, you know what? Maybe you do get a little percentage docked if you don't play a certain percentage of your games. Or, you know, maybe I think the awards thing is interesting, and it doesn't relate to it only relates to the stars, but the stars are the best. Like, nobody cares if middling players are taking nights off. Like, nobody, it's the stars that everybody wants to see every single night in their building. And so when you say, hey, if you miss 17 games, like, you may not be the MVP, even though you're the best player that year. You may not be a first-team All-NBA player if you only play 50 games. Like, I think players care about that more than you think. Now, is it going to make guys push through a little something to be able to play? I personally hope it does. But to me, the whole plan nights off thing, it's one thing if a player is legitimately injured, but to me, there's too many times where teams and players are skirting that with, oh, this guy's a little sore, a little banged up. And yeah, you put injury down on the sheet, but it's really load management. It's really giving a guy a night off.
I don't know if you can change the culture of the league. Do we have more callers? I don't want to take up time.
We'll
get right to them. But I just wanted to say, I think it's more incumbent upon the individual teams. I think the Warriors have done a good job of this. You just have to be hyper cautious about who you're committing the big money to. We know that the Warriors they've rested players, but is there anybody on this Warrior team that you feel like, oh, where are they? They're taking days off when they're not even hurt. I don't think so. But there are guys, I'll just use, this may not be fair.
Kawhi, Kyrie, Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons, when Ben Simmons came into the league, there were some questions about, does he really like to play basketball that much? And you know what? That's, every human being has that right.
Paul George is another one.
Well, with older players, too, that becomes part of it. But organizations have to be just more careful than they've ever been about hitching their wagons to guys about whom you could question their desire to play, to win at the highest level. You need guys who need to win. Everybody would like to win, but I think teams have to be on their own. If the league could do it as a league, that's great, but I think it has to be on a club-by-club level. Teams have to be more careful than ever about who are we giving this much money to. Like, does Kyrie Irving really need to win?
No.
Then why am I giving him all this money?
Well, because he demands it if you want to play. I mean,
then, like, let him be somebody else's problem.
Like Kyrie, well, I would agree with you. I mean, Kyrie Irving at this point, to me, is going wherever he can get a max deal.
Supremely talented.
And then immediately, like, I don't think Kyrie Irving has cared about basketball since he made the three at Oracle in Game 7 in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe that. I think he's done everything under the sun to come up with reasons why he cannot play and not have to just come out and acknowledge the fact that he doesn't feel like playing.
Yeah. So whose fault is it if he's proven that and teams keep giving him tens of millions of dollars? Is it his fault or is it their fault?
It's the team's fault.
Yes.
For sure. But it's also, you know, player, like, Kevin Durant wanted to play with Kyrie. Like, that's an indictment of Kevin Durant.
I agree with that, too.
Like, Kevin Durant was like, I love this dude. I'm going to go win championships with this dude.
Uh-huh.
And, like, that was bad on Kevin Durant to think that, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of these players, they're friends. They like each other. They want to play with each other. And then
it's the AAU syndrome.
A lot of these guys don't know better.
Yeah,
like, they don't know how great teams are built, how championship teams are built.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they do because they're star players and they know star talent and all that, but they're bad GMs. It's like LeBron.
You can't let your stars dictate talent acquisitions.
No.
You can't do it.
You absolutely cannot. And so, I mean, to me, it's how do you fix that? Maybe you give everybody a certain amount of nights. Maybe you say, hey, everybody gets 10 a year, and anything beyond that needs to be independently certified.
Mm.
You know, I don't know. But even that is broaching the level of, you know, uncomfortable, right? Are you questioning an injury, which is obviously something you don't want to do. Charles in El Cerrito next here on Warriors This Week. What's going on, Charles? Hey, Charles, you there? Did we lose Charles? Do we have Charles? Hey, Charles.
Hey.
We got you, Charles.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. We got you.
Can you hear me?
We got you.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm just calling, thanks, you guys, about the protest that Mark Cuban levied against the Warriors and the league. It's been 11 days. I thought it would be resolved within 10. Do you guys have any idea what's going on?
He never filed it.
Thoughts about it and what impact it would have.
He never actually filed it, right?
I'm not sure on that point. I think today is technically the 10th day, though, because they played on the 22nd. They had 5 days to file and then 5 days to be heard. And I haven't seen any reporting on it, although it would be foolish after looking at all the replays if he had actually gone on to file it. I sort of dismissed it as, well, that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think today would be the 10th day in the process of five to file it. So he would have had to have filed it by, I think, Monday, this past Monday, the 27th, and then the league would have heard it within 5 days, and today would be the 5th day. So maybe something leaks out on that today.
If he filed it.
Yeah. If he didn't file it, it doesn't matter.
My theory is that he never intended to file it. His team, they really looked stupid, and he said, I'm going to file a protest to try to cover for the fact that his team looked like a bunch of idiots.
Right. Yeah. I think...
So we'll see.
I think you're... Well said. Well said. Let's go to Nate in Lathrop next here on Warriors This Week. Hey, Nate.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing this afternoon? Hope you're having a good one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nate.
Just wanted
What's
to talk about the Young Love last night in GP2 and to your guys' point kind of about salary and getting paid and how much the Young Love just really contributed last night. He's getting paid, was it $8 million a year? And he could have easily have phoned it in this year, but instead... I look at him. Last night when he got that offensive rebound, kicked the play, and he made the three, the expression on his face just shows you how much he wants to be there and play. And, like, that kind of drive, that really hypes up the Warrior fans. I mean, we really want to root for these guys, and that gives us so much hope for this year. And it was just super exciting, great fourth quarter. I know we're used, as Warriors fans, we're used to the third quarter, the spark that comes in. These guys just kick everyone in the teeth in the third quarter. But this year, it felt like it's been the fourth quarter instead of the third. So I don't know how you guys feel the same way or if you guys have seen that.
It's been the fourth quarter a lot at home. And, yeah, I mean, last night was the quintessential GP2 game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really was. He's getting rebounds. He's defending. It's loose balls. It's energy plays.
Yes, yes.
It's all kinds of things like that. And so, I mean, he can help this team if he's healthy. He's still in that 15 to 17-minute range, which I think is about where it's going to wind up. But no, I think you have to like what you've seen from Gary Payton II here over these first handful of games.
to me, you can't criticize the trade in terms of this year. We don't know what Wiseman's going to become. So, you know, maybe next year he's an all-star.
As long as Peyton plays between now and the end of the year at the level that he has. I'll say this. If Peyton, and I apologize for jumping in on you today.
But I know that we kind of see this differently, well, but I gotcha.
I'm not willing to go as this whole – like if he comes up with, oh, he's got core soreness Tuesday and can't play the final three games of the year, and then he's out for the half of the first round – I'm sorry, that for me gets factored in. Now, if he continues to play every game as he has so far, then I'm in your pew.
Yeah, this year, assuming he plays the rest of the year, you can see how they are right now. They are so much better with GP2 than they were with Wiseman this year. And I know, there goes Whitey. He's going after Wiseman. Wiseman could be, he didn't have a great game last night, but Wiseman could become an all-star. But in terms of this year, when you've got, I know it's cliche, the window is closing, you've got your veteran core, it just, to me, makes more sense to have a guy who helps you now rather than have a guy who didn't fit. And bless James Wiseman. Hopefully he has a great career. And if he does, then the Warriors are still going to hear about it. But in terms of this year, last night was the example. Whether you agree or not, last night showed this is why the Warriors made that trade.
Yeah, no question. And it gives him the extra defender. It gives him an extra rotation piece. I know we've had a couple of callers. We had Khaled call in. We had Robert call in. Both mentioned Andrew Wiggins being out, being a blessing, in a sense, for Jonathan Kuminga, the ability to play more minutes. I have to give Steve Kerr credit for, and I do think it gets a, there are more minutes for sure with Kuminga out, or with Wiggins out for Kuminga.
Yeah.
Kuminga's playing the four, though. Like, people need to.
We talked about this last week. Yeah.
Kuminga is playing the four, and in the first game that Peyton came back on Sunday against Minnesota, Steve Kerr played Peyton and Kuminga together, and Kevon Looney started, and they both came off the bench, and they played together, I think it was at the beginning of the second quarter, and they were awful. It was an awful lineup, and Steve Kerr, I think at that point, said, you know what, these two play the same position on offense, and we can't have them on the floor together.
As odd as that sounds, but yeah.
And so, you know, because Kuminga, all of Kuminga's offensive prowess has been cutting, you know, plays made off of his own defense. Like, he's been tremendous. Like, it goes back to what we did talk about last week, which is for those kind of coming down my road of CJD, Kuminga's doing it. Well, Kuminga's doing it exactly the way that I've said Kuminga needs to do it to help this team.
He's not filling in for Wiggins.
Exactly. He's not improvising out on the court. Maybe one play a game, he's cutting, and the pass is made to him, and he's dunking it. He's wide open in the corner for a three, and he's taking that shot. He's getting out in transition. He's rebounding. Like, it's high motor type plays where he scores within the context of the offense, and we're seeing that there's a lot of buckets he can get against a lot of teams in the context of the offense. But the primary point is true, that Wiggins being out has opened up minutes for Kuminga to be able to get on the court. And I give Steve Kerr credit for separating him and Peyton by putting Kuminga in the starting lineup at the four. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were starting to go down the road. I think Monty Poole wrote about it. I think some other fans had kind of chimed in as to, well, maybe it's time to start Kuminga with Wiggins out. But people were saying start Kuminga instead of DiVincenzo, not start Kuminga instead of Looney, which I think is a more practical approach. And then you get Kuminga out there with Draymond. You're still able to have DiVincenzo's playmaking with Steph and Clay at the beginning of the game, and you separate Kuminga from Peyton now with the position groups that are on the floor together, and you make Looney the backup center, which in turn has meant Jamichael Green hasn't played the last couple of games, but you can't play everybody. And I think that was a nice, subtle way for Steve Kerr to, somebody that doesn't always get credit for looking for ways to play a younger player more, he did that with Kuminga. He figured out a way not to play him at the three, but how to play him more at the four.
Kuminga, as I've said before, I think he's been a success story this year, and what I see from Kuminga is, we know that defensively he's just shown this year the willingness to guard the other team's best player. at different positions. He defends different positions. He'll guard people 94 feet. But offensively, Steve Kerr talked, we knew this about the Warrior offense, but Steve Kerr talked about it again this week with Tim Kawakami. The Warriors have a 0.5 principle offensively, which is whatever you're going to do, you're going to pass the ball, shoot it, dribble it, drive. They want you to decide within half a second. And that's not easy. It's simple. It's not complicated. It's simple, but it's not easy. And finally, I think Kuminga is more comfortable with that. Before, it was just his natural tendency to get the ball, kind of be a ball stopper, and take longer than that to decide what he wanted to do. And he struggled with that. And we're seeing now he is much more comfortable playing in the flow, and it's made him better, and the team is playing better when he's on the floor because of it.
It's worked.
Yes.
He
deserves a credit for that.
He absolutely deserves the credit. But it goes back to the thing that I've said, which is, can you fit your game in the box?
Yep.
And he has been able to fit his game in the box. The one thing I would worry about along the lines of Khaled and Robert is when Wiggins does come back. Now Steve Kerr's got to refigure it out as to who's going to play when and where, and how does that, you know, who gets impacted by the Wiggins return? Because I do think Kuminga gets impacted by that, even though Wiggins comes in and starts at the three, whereas Kuminga's been playing the four. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that maybe coming up a little bit in the final segment. 888-957-9570. Final segment of Warriors This Week, what? JD and Whitey, 95.7 The Game.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Middle of the paint. Up top to Draymond, gets it to Curry. Curry steps in. Three ball on the way. No. Payton went for the dunk. Couldn't get it to fall. Loose rebound. Payton hustles to it in the corner. Falling down, finds Looney to Draymond. Over to Clay. Sets up for a triple. Yes, indeed. Another dagger by Clay. Makes it 125-108. And Steve Kerr is going to empty his bench.
All right, back.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
All right, final segment. John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason. No, that was on me. That's on me. 888-957-9570. Warriors get a win over the Spurs last night. Denver tomorrow in Denver. And then Oklahoma City at Sacramento, at Portland for the Warriors over the final four games of the season. How many wins do the Warriors need to avoid the play-in tournament? I think three does it for sure.
Yep.
Two might.
Could.
Two might.
Could.
Two's a coin flip. One and zero ain't going to do it. One and zero, you're in big trouble.
You got Portland if you want it, right? I mean, maybe if you get to that point and it doesn't matter. I mean, you probably win that game with four people.
Portland's
right?
The gimme.
Yeah, yeah.
Portland's a gimme at the end. I like that game being at the end. That's the gimme. Oklahoma City, to me, is the must get after Portland.
And OKC is still in the play-in.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They're 10th right now. Yeah, but they've had a couple of losses this week that have kept Dallas alive. If Oklahoma City had just beaten Charlotte at home, Dallas would be in big trouble. But as it relates now, there's only a one-game difference, maybe even a half-game difference.
And Minnesota's 39-39, but losing Naz Reid's going to hurt.
It is. And Dallas plays Miami. There's only two games with the Final Four tonight. There's two NBA games. Dallas is in Miami. And then the big one, as it relates to the Warriors, the Clippers are in New Orleans. So you've got the team that the Warriors are tied with, technically ahead of the Warriors via tiebreaker in the Clippers. And then you've got the Pelicans, who are behind the Warriors but trying to scratch their way back toward avoiding the play-in tournament, as is the goal for everybody.
Pelicans are not bad.
No.
Brandon Ingram's playing really well. And
better
they defend.
Lately, right?
Yeah.
Six
they
out
defend.
Of seven, I think.
Yeah, and they get the buy-in. You know, Willie Green has them competing, so they're not a team you can sleep on. By the way, we were just talking before we went to break about, all right, what happens when with all the minutes now, if Wiggins comes back, we hope he will, we don't know. Jason Dumas, our friend, tweeted that he's in town. That's unconfirmed, but even if he is in town, we don't know what he's doing. But if Wiggins is back, what happens to some of those minutes? And I think, JD, a lot of people would say, well, Kuminga's still getting his minutes, and Anthony Lamb is the one who's not going to get any minutes. What do you think of that notion? I would bet you 90% of Warrior fans would say, that's what I do. Bye-bye, Anthony Lamb.
Well, and I've even alluded to it in kind of laying out the top eight. Like I've said, Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Looney, that's five. DiVincenzo, Poole, Payton, 6, 7, 8. And then I'll even go Kuminga, 9 at that point as like guys that basically would play every single game. And then Lamb and Jamichael Green will see 10, 11. But the truth is, and Kerr loves playing Lamb and Kuminga together. Mm-hmm. That pairing has been really good because their games complement each other really
Lamb
well.
Lamb shoots, and he's a better shooter, even with that funky one-hand thing,
yeah,
than Kuminga is.
And there's some irony, and Draymond with Kuminga and Lamb have been a positive trio on the front line as well. And so I don't think it's as absolute, because, and the reason it's not as absolute is because it goes back to the whole 3 versus 4 thing,
yep.
Which is if at that point you'd be asking Kuminga to basically play the 3 when Lamb has been the guy that's been playing the 3. Essentially, he's been the backup 3, and Kuminga's been the starting 4 of late, and before he was in the starting lineup, he was the backup 4. If Wiggins comes back, then Draymond goes in there, and if Gary Payton on offense is the backup 4, then where does that leave Kuminga?
It's funny because the positionless thing, I understand it, and it's been interesting to see, but there are positions,
yes,
there sometimes they're just harder to see,
yes,
harder to discern.
And sometimes they're different on offense than defense,
yeah,
which is something that you have to factor in as well. Like Payton or Kuminga could be the 1 on defense, but they're the 4 on offense.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So you have to have a combination that melds it all together. So it is going to be interesting with Wiggins back, and we'll see how much Wiggins. It wouldn't surprise me if, let's say, if Wiggins, it does get announced here in the next few days that Wiggins is going to come back. And we don't know that, and we don't
right.
want to intimate that that's
right.
coming.
We haven't heard something that we're, you know, hinting
but,
at.
But let's just say it does come to fruition where Wiggins is coming back. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Wiggins comes off the bench at the beginning.
It would surprise me if he didn't.
Yeah, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, and Steve Kerr said a couple of different times over the last couple of weeks, like, Kuminga's a 4. Like, I know people come down my road, like, JD, why do you say that? Why do you say that? Well, Kerr said it, like, bluntly.
Uh-huh.
He's a 4.
Uh-huh.
And Kerr also has doubled down on DiVincenzo remaining in the starting lineup as long as Wiggins isn't. And he likes that combination of his playmaking ability and what he brings with Steph and Clay and Draymond, whether it's Kuminga. And he said the choice is Kuminga or Looney with the lineup that he has right now. And I think it's going to be interesting because if you look at the tendencies And then we got our buddy Tim in North Carolina who's going to join us here in just a second. If you look at Kerr's tendencies, the tendency would be to play Kuminga less when Wiggins comes back. Like, that would just, if you just look at the way he's done it. But again, I give Kerr credit for figuring out a way to play Kuminga and make him his most effective self, even though Payton came back, and he did that by inserting him into the starting lineup. I will also say this. If the choice is Looney or Kuminga to start, it also depends on the opposing center. And so, if you're playing Jokic tomorrow, that means Looney's probably starting over Kuminga.
Yeah.
So that adjusts the rotation a little bit in how the Warriors attack it. If you're playing Sabonis, that means Looney's starting over Kuminga.
The cool thing about Looney is, and they made this point in the post game last night, you know, some guys you have to worry about whether they're coming off the bench or the minutes. And Looney's like, he's going to do what he does, whether he's starting or not, or how many minutes. And obviously, it'd be stupid not to play him. But he doesn't care. Looney gives you what he gives you, whether you're starting him, bring him off the bench, whoever he's playing against. That's a really cool and useful thing about Kevon Looney.
No doubt. 888-957-9570. Let's go Tim in North Carolina. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
What's up, fellas? Great to talk to you real quick. I know y'all about to wrap this thing up, but if y'all have a minute, can y'all see who the best, as far as three-point percentage-wise, out of Lamb and Kuminga from the beginning of the year, from the turn of the year, if y'all can check? I know for the month of March it's Kuminga, but I would just love to see since January who is. But I did have about three things I wanted to run by y'all real quick, guys. J.D., I wanted to ask you, because I heard it last night, you said from time to time about as long as Kuminga doesn't do the do you consider when he takes the pull-up 15-foot off with one or two dribbles, the ha-ha-ha? Because I don't, and I think he has a great 15-footer. I also, so I don't consider that the ha-ha-ha. And the only one I really on the team see does that is Poole. I don't even see Steph doing a lot of ha-ha-ha. So I wanted to ask you, do you consider that being part of that?
Yeah.
Because the guy's 15-footer, most of the time he don't even hit net. The second one I want to ask you, Jay, I told you, I've been telling y'all about that Steph and Kuminga pick and roll. They did it last year in the Chicago game, and Kuminga went crazy in that game. And I was wondering why they weren't doing it a lot this year. And you thought I was crazy saying, well, what's going to happen with Draymond? But look how much space it is for that guy to get to the basket when they do it. So maybe Kerr was just keeping that one in his chamber. I don't know. But I love that Kuminga and Steph pick and roll because that basket, that lane is wide open for him. And the last one, I mean, I'm a Kuminga fan, but at this point, I'm not even politicking for him anymore because if they don't play him at this point, they're just literally hurting the team. I mean, the guy's just bringing something so positive to the team that if we got to sit here and debate Kuminga, Lamb, Kuminga this, I mean, we're just hurting the team. And I think he'll easily morph in two or three. I think right now that can't be the we can't try and do that now. We're too far into it. I think as long as he keeps developing this thing over the summer, he will eventually morph into that three, hopefully maybe at the beginning of the next year when we can take more chances, let him miss some shots and stay in the game and not panic. I think he'll get there. But I just wanted to ask you that, Jay. I know I threw a lot at y'all, man, and y'all about to wrap this up. But if you can, I did want to know. I'm pretty sure Kuminga got a better three-point shooter percentage from Lamb since the beginning of the year. I think he's 44% in the month of March. And it's just funny because in our mind, we think he's not a shooter, but every time he's, his shots are usually pure. Don't even really hit the net most of the time. So, I mean, don't hit the rim a lot of the times. But,
yeah.
All right, guys, it's great to hear from y'all, man. I'm sorry I got in late, but, over here it's like 3:45. So, all right, take care.
No, we appreciate it. No,
thanks,
we appreciate
Tim.
There are a lot to chew on. Kuminga has shot it better than Lamb since January 1st. However, over the whole season, Lamb's 37.2. Kuminga 35.5.
And that's on more per game, too.
Yeah.
More shots. Not a lot, but it's more shots per game.
Exactly. And so that's that. As far as the
was about since January.
But no, Kuminga has shot it better since January. But again, the other thing that Kerr said, and I'll quote him, and I agree with you, Tim, I'm not ruling out Kuminga's ability to be a three in the future.
Got to improve his handle.
I'm glad he pointed that out.
Yeah.
Like it's about how can he get on the court and help this team this year, and that is exclusively as a four. The other little snippet that Kerr has said in a couple of his pregame pressers is, and because this relates to what Tim just said about the types of shots. Kerr has said he likes the shots Kuminga gets in their offense at the four, and that I think sets up more of the cutting, more of the corner threes, which are available for Peyton from time to time when he's out on the floor. And as far as the question about, you know, was the pull up last night Kuminga going, ha, ha, ha. maybe a little bit, but there's been one a game. There's been one what I call improv play a game for Kuminga where, and honestly, they've gone more well than they haven't over the last handful of games.
You have to give him some of those, don't you, as part of his growth?
He can have one a game.
Not a lot. But
to me, there's really been like one a game over the last five or six games, which is fine. Like it's, and I think he missed a, he made a driving spinning layup in another game. He made the pull-up jumper in last night. There was another game where I think he drove and missed. There was another game where I think he drove and got blocked. But again, we're not, what I'm saying is you don't want Kuminga looking to go
right
3, 4, 5 times a game like that.
Right.
And he hasn't been. It's been
within the flow.
Some of
the
pick and roll. It's been cutting. It's been basically the Warriors offense and the way teams play the Warriors offense have led to, hey, you can get Kuminga the ball right by the basket and he can go up and dunk it. Or it's a wide open three in the corner where he has shot better from the corner spots. What I don't like is the quick one pass, he gets it on the wing, and there was one of these last night. One pass gets it on the wing, and he fires it up from the wing from three.
Don't you think
that's
he learned?
That's the shot that needs to go. That,
yes.
No, not now. But I won think a game, eh.
He learned from that Laker game down there, where, and I think they did it more than once, but where they, the nationally televised game, where they just stayed off him, and he was chucking threes from the corner, like early in the shot clock.
Yes.
I think he, and I'm sure Steve Kerr impressed upon him the importance of avoiding those shots, but I think he learned from that.
Yeah, and I think the question is going to become... You know, do you feel comfortable playing Wiggins and Kuminga and Draymond together? Is that something that would make sense if you're the Warriors in a playoff series? There is some sorting out to do, because at any time the roles change, there's always a little bit of an adjustment, and we saw it in the Minnesota game. The one game the Warriors have lost here of the last six, when was it? It was the game where Gary Payton came back,
mm-hmm.
and roles changed a little bit, and the Warriors had to figure that out. It's not going to be.
That's not
nothing.
Why they lost, though.
No, but it is something that's on display a lot. When they do lose, a lot of the times it is something's out of.
Yeah.
Like, that's been something through the years. Whenever it's like, oh, Steph comes back and they play Phoenix with none of their players and they lose and they play terrible. Like, it just, that has kind of been a thing for this team in the regular season. When guys have come back, it's thrown them completely out of whack.
I agree with that, but I think the reason they lost the Minnesota game, not to get lost in that, because that's, you know, water under the old Bay Bridge, but just the turnovers at the end, that late game execution game was like Harry High School stuff.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And so, and you know, 510 says, well, the vets take plenty of questionable shots. Well, yeah, the vets are allowed to. The young players are not. Like
depends who, like Steph Curry, there almost is no questionable
like
shot.
Clay
almost.
Clay can take bad shots. Kuminga can't.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, those are the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not.
And it's not even really just because he's a veteran. It's because he's Clay freaking Thompson.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there have been times where Clay's taken some terrible shots early in games. I mean, that's the one thing to kind of bring it back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, which I think is interesting as far as the matchups. And I've said it, you know, to me, there's no way the Warriors really can manipulate this as far as who they're going to play. But if it fell where they get Sacramento over, say, Phoenix or Memphis or the Clippers in the first round of the playoffs, to me, that would be the perfect fit. But I'll say this, as far as, you know, that Sacramento matchup again, the one thing you cannot do against the Kings is take bad shots and turn the ball over. You do that, they might hit you with a 45-point quarter, and then you're buried.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are disciplined and run your offense and take good shots and move the ball and get to the basket, Kuminga might have 30 on 15 of 15 against the Kings, because they get so out of whack and are vulnerable to the pass and cutting and all of those different things that you can really annihilate him on the interior and get open looks and rhythm to where you'll shoot a better percentage from three. But some of the stuff Klay Thompson's done when Klay Thompson's been cold will get your ass run out in a quarter against Sacramento. So it's, you know, we can say, hey, best matchup, and I still think you're better off taking your chances with the Kings than you are with Phoenix or the Clippers or Memphis. But you still have to play buttoned the hell up against them to beat them. And that's something at times in the regular season the Warriors, frankly, just haven't done.
Real quick, because I know that we don't know for sure if these two teams are going to play, but if it's Golden State, Sacramento, two absolute keys will be who gets in more foul trouble, how often,
big
Sabonis time. Or Draymond Green, which of those two guys is in foul trouble? And then what can Peyton do against De'Aaron Fox? If he can shut him off, then it would be a pretty quick series, actually.
And look, Peyton,
I don't think he can.
And Peyton's playing 17 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
like you're going to have somebody else on him.
Right.
And it's not going to be Klay Thompson at this stage. It's going to be, I mean, it's probably going to be Kuminga if you don't have Wiggins that's going to be on him. And then at that point, it becomes, you know, can you get out to the shooters, basically?
DiVincenzo will probably get a shot at him, too.
Yeah, no, it's a good call.
Yeah.
No, DiVincenzo would definitely get a shot at him as well.
But anyway,
DiVincenzo would be on him at the start.
Yeah, it may not even come to that, but if it does, those are going to be two very important keys.
No, and you got to make sure everything else is on point, and, mm-hmm. and Sabonis could hurt the Warriors. I don't think there's a doubt. I mean, he is kind of a mini Jokic in some ways. They run him out at the high post,
including at the defensive end.
Yeah,
in some ways.
True.
Yeah.
And I think for whatever reason, they've done a good job of, and maybe it's because they're just scoring 130. They've done a good job of minimizing how bad Sabonis can be defensively. He got in a lot of foul trouble early and then really hasn't a lot over the course of the season for the most part. But I think they're scoring so much that you haven't really taken a magnifying glass to why they're so bad defensively, because they're scoring enough to where they've won a lot.
Mm-hmm.
To whereas if they were closer to a 500 team, you'd really have the microscope out more on how bad their defense has been and why. And I think a lot of that would be that they just don't have any rim protection, even with Sabonis in there clogging up the paint.
Right. He's a willing defender and he works really hard. He's just not very quick. But anyway, we'll see if any of that comes to pass. I'm hoping so. That would be a great series. A lot of fun.
888-957-9570. Final couple of minutes here. John Dickinson and Whitey Gleason. It's Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game. Pretty crazy how time flies. Just four games to go for the Dubs. Yeah. 78 in the books. Now 41-37 tied with the Clippers. What do you think as far as the final four games here for the Warriors? At Denver tomorrow, and then Oklahoma City, at Sac, and Portland a week from tomorrow up in Portland. The Clippers have the game tonight against the Pelicans. And then
they don't have an easy schedule, do they?
They don't. They have four games to go as well, and the Clippers have the game against the Pelicans. The Clippers also play over their final three. They play the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
They play the
Portland
Blazers, which is a game that obviously they would have to get.
Then they're at Phoenix the next night.
And then they're at Phoenix to end it. So the Clippers have some rest, but then they play a back-to-back at the end. So, yeah, they have the Clippers, and that's one of those afternoon games on the Saturday down at Crypto a week from today. That's obviously their must-get among the games that they have left. So the Warriors both have Portland in that last day. And then, Phoenix and the Clippers at the end of the year. Phoenix could be locked into the four spot at that point. But that final day is going to mean a lot, I think, as far as who gets in and who plays where.
Yeah, I think the fifth spot is certainly well in play for the Warriors.
Yeah,
especially
definitely.
If they win tomorrow, I might even consider them the favorites to be in the fifth spot, if they want it.
Yeah, if they win tomorrow, I think they're getting fifth.
Yeah, I do, too.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
If they win tomorrow, shut it down, you're going to Phoenix, I think. I guess I'd be going to Phoenix.
Boots on the ground. Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm really interested to see how hard the Warriors go after that one. I think everybody's going to play, but will there be any manipulation of trying to...
Boy.
Can't play that game. For the Warriors.
I guess you can, but we'll find out, won't we?
I mean, you may not be good enough. I mean, the Warriors could very naturally go in there and play and just not play well and lose.
Uh-huh. That's true as well.
That's pretty much what they've done most of the year
in
games like that.
And I understand why you said this year it's kind of a mediocre year, and that's true when you look at we're not going to have anybody. We're going to have any – what's going to be the highest win total in the league this year? No one's winning 60. But it has been so much fun this year that teams in the West, especially, you know, what do you got here, 3 through 11, 12 even, it's so tightly bunched that it makes this regular season so much fun. And that's the biggest problem in the NBA. So many of the regular season games, they just don't matter. Even the players tell you, they don't matter. Jimmy Butler says, I don't start playing until after the All-Star break. That's fine. But this year, if you're a Warrior fan or a fan of one of these teams, these last four games, the way it looks right now, they are very significant.
It does look that way.
I like that.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. It's taken a season full of none of these games matter to get to a point where you feel like the games matter at the end, but it's also, I mean, if you're the Warriors, I mean, I get it where you're like, okay, well, you couldn't beat Detroit one time. You couldn't beat Orlando one time.
I know. You lost
at Charlotte. Like you could be locked into fourth minimum right now. And every one of those teams obviously could say that. But to me, it's more like, let's quit. They could have ended the conversation about whether they're good enough to make a run and can they, you know, what matchup do they want and this and that and the other if they were just the freaking four seed already. And that would have been a mediocre four seed in terms of record compared to a lot of other years.
Let me ask you this as we're wrapping things up. This was a question that Kalina and Bob Fitzgerald addressed last night at the beginning of the telecast. This Warrior team, and to be honest, I'm not sure whether they included Wiggins in the mix or not. I don't think they did. Is this team, do they have enough talent to make a run? Not as just a surefire championship team. Does this team have enough talent to make a run at another championship? They both came down on the side of a little bit reluctantly, but they're trying to be balanced and fair, and they both said, I think it does. What do you think of that notion with the Warriors? And we've talked about that a lot this year.
Well, I think they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course they do.
Even without Wiggins?
It'll be a lot harder. And that is really where I draw the line. I'll just say this. If the Warriors, if and we don't know, if it is announced, let's say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this coming week, Wiggins is coming back. And he's going to ramp up for the last week and a half, and the Warriors are going to be in the playoffs. Like, Wiggins is the difference right now, and we'll see how it shakes out in a week. Like, Wiggins, to me, would be the difference between comfortably picking them to beat Sacramento and thinking, oh, I don't know, maybe in seven. Like, it's going to be a hard-fought series. You know, Wiggins would be the difference between believing the Warriors have a shot at upsetting Phoenix. Like, I think the Warriors have no if the Warriors play Phoenix and don't have Wiggins, I don't think they've got a shot. To me they got no shot. And that may be harsh to hear, but like that's, you know, when you start getting into all the matchups and everything, but take a step back. Do they have, you know, you play Sacramento, can you win? Can you beat Memphis? You win? Like, again, I think Wiggins has to be part of that. But I have no inside information on it, but if he's back in the Bay and the report from Jason Dumas is true,
yeah,
to me, you're back in the Bay because you're going to try to give it a run.
You know that he knows that and they know that. And if there is any way, and if he's so distraught or so involved in whatever's going on, fine, you know, bless him. But if there's any way he comes back, he knows, wow, this is the time when they need me and I've got to come back. And I have a sense that that's going to happen, JD.
Yeah,
we'll see. I don't know, but that would be my best guess.
Yeah, so he knows, and maybe we come to find out that that's sort of been the plan all along, at least in his
Wouldn't
mind. Knowing
me.
That he had,
yeah,
knowing in his mind, and again, he didn't have to disclose that because it's none of anybody's business.
Right.
But you never know. At some point, maybe he said, "All right, I'm gonna take until this day, and then I'm going to head back." And maybe there's times where he thought he was. Again, I don't know. I don't totally feel comfortable speculating on that.
But if he does, then this thing's wide open.
But if he does come back, I think the Warriors absolutely can. And again, make a run to me is win a couple of playoff series. The path is there. Whether it's Sacramento and Memphis or Sacramento and then somebody beats Memphis and you play a second round series, the path is there to get to a conference finals. But it's not going to be easy. It's certainly not a lock. And the Warriors are going to have their top, I think, 8, 9, 10 together at a greater level than even their top 8, 9, 10 was last year. They had the top 6, and that was good enough last year. I think they need the top 8 for sure.
Well, it's like Steph told Steiny this week. It's never easy.
No, it's never easy, no doubt. And this is going to be harder than any run that they've had to try and make. Whitey, great stuff. As always, appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks, Grandy. Good job.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, we'll do it again next Saturday from 10 until 1. Yeah, thanks to the great Mark Grandy for sitting in here for Craig. Great. Craig's at the Final Four. Appreciate that. Craig, enjoy that. Fox Sports Radio next here on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild.
conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.